The OSU SpursCast, episode 547. My name is Paul Garcia, and I am the host of SpursCast. Joining me on this post-draft episode is Project Spurs' Benjamin Bornstein. How you doing, Ben?
I am great, sir. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Basketball's been over, it feels like a month now, and they're barely having the NBA Awards as you and I are recording this on Monday evening. You have any comments on that?
None that I have not expressed publicly before.
Obviously this event is not getting a lot of positive publicity just because of how late it is into the season. I mean, it just, like we said, the draft's over, free agency is about to start this coming weekend, and they're barely giving out the MVP award, the rookie of the year, and all that stuff. So anyway, we're not here, Ben, to talk about those awards. We're here more so to talk about the picks that the Spurs made. You know, Thursday was the NBA draft. They didn't trade any of their picks to move up, you know, or to even move back in the draft. They ended up taking Samanich with the 19th pick in the first round, and then Keldon Johnson with the 29th pick. And then from there in the second round, they took Quindary Weatherspoon with the 49th pick. So we're going to kind of go into detail on these picks, what these players bring to the Spurs, and what we think their route is in year one with San Antonio. So let's first begin with Lucas Samanich. 19-year-old kid from Croatia. He's 6'10", plays the power forward spot mainly. Last year played professionally with Olympia in Slovenia. Some of his strengths, he has great size and ability for a modern forward. He's a good athlete who plays above the rim in space, a capable spot-up three-point shooter. He has post skills that are steadily improving. Shot 38% from three last year on his team. Also shot 21% in a different league. He spoke with us, the media, after he was selected. He says that he compares himself on offense to Kevin Durant and on defense to Andre Kirilenko, who used to play in the NBA. He says he can switch 1 through 5 on defense. So what are your thoughts on them taking Samanich at 19?
I had heard he had gotten a first-round promise from someone after the NBA draft combine anyway, so I wasn't surprised. A lot of people were surprised that they took him at 19. I had heard that he was going to go top 20. He played really well the first day of the scrimmages, of the open scrimmages, and he shut it down after that. He didn't play the second day because he got enough feedback to say he's going to be a first-rounder. So not terribly surprising to me. I would say I thought they could have gotten him at 29. I thought they could have gotten good value for him. And there were several players on the board that a lot of Spurs fans have targeted, and even I had targeted. I thought Nasir Little, Brandon Clark at 19 would have been great value as well. A lot of people had Brandon Clark graded out as a lottery top 16-ish in there. So I thought that would have been good value for them. And then Nasir Little, obviously everyone had him as a lottery pick despite a bad or a down year at UNC. So I think it was a solid pick. It addressed a need to back up LaMarcus Aldridge and Jakob Poeltl. And I think it depends on which site or which measurements you're going with. But I did see that he was 6'11", for what that's worth, and he was about 230. So if that's true, then he can play probably both 4 and 5. He can guard 4 and 5. And if he wants to be as defensively great as Andre Kirilenko, then please have at it, because that guy was a baller. I mean, he got out of the NBA kind of early, but he still ended up playing in Europe, and I think he ended up winning a bunch of MVPs over there anyway. He's a great player. Andre Kirilenko is awesome. If he wants to be Kirilenko, please go ahead and be Kirilenko. I'm very much okay with that.
Are we talking about European Kevin Durant?
Yeah, we're talking about European. So, SpursCast listeners, coming in here, we obviously need to give him an introduction. But Trevor Zigraf is joining us for this episode. You can follow him on Twitter at Trevor Writes. So I did invite him to be on this SpursCast episode. So Trevor, we just barely got started. We're basically talking about Samanich right now. Like you just said, the European Kevin Durant, and Ben was also talking about his comparison to Andre Kirilenko that he has for himself. Ben just gave his opinion on Samanich at 19. What was your opinion of the Spurs taking him that early?
I mean, and maybe you already touched on this. I was kind of stunned that Nas Little and Brandon Clark fell like they did, but I was a little surprised they didn't take one of those two guys. But I did know that they loved Samanich. Is that how we're saying it?
Yeah, I just looked at the pronunciation guide. So let me read this real quick. So yeah, it is Luka Samanich is what they put in there.
So. Okay. Yeah. That's what we're going with. But I've been calling him Tall Luka just for fun. So I knew they liked him. I mean, he's, you know, I think we've probably all seen the same reports about how much they've been scouting him. He was really good at the draft combine. And the video you see of him, he's, you know, he projects well. He's mobile. He really can slide his feet. I think that's going to be the biggest thing. It's just, how's he going to defend on the perimeter? Bertans, who I love and have loved forever, I just think he just doesn't move that well on the perimeter, and that's kind of what holds him back to being a really, like, really regular rotation guy. Like, he probably would start if he was just a little bit more nimble on defense. So I really like that aspect of him, and I do think there's some versatility to his game. I don't know how much he's going to get to show off of the versatility on offense. And frankly, I don't know how much they need him to show it off, but with all the offensive firepower they have in the backcourt, but it's I'm excited for him. I personally would have taken Nas Little just because I thought that's talent. That's unavoidable talent, but I didn't have the issue with it that a lot of people did.
Yeah, and so, you know, RC does say that he does intend for him to come over next season, even though, you know, he's playing overseas in Europe. So he should be here in San Antonio. My question to you guys is that, you know, when you look at this roster right now at that fourth spot, you know, you have – it looks most likely like Rudy Gay is definitely coming back for this next season, and then you still have Bertans, like you mentioned, Trevor. Now, do either of you see – you know, is that going to basically put him in Austin year one, is the fact that those two guys are ahead of him in the depth chart, or do you think he could beat either of them out for some minutes? Whoever wants to take that question.
I'll go ahead and take that question first. No one runs. I think if Davis Bertans plays poorly, if there's a stretch of games where he plays poorly throughout the season, I think we see a call-up. We also have to consider that Chimezie Metu could get his call-up and could earn some minutes as well, which may push Samanich down and keep him in Austin for the year. And I think – most people would say that is the expectation for him, that he's going to be in Austin the majority of the year, and maybe he'll get call-ups on some road trips, get a feel for an NBA road trip. But for the most part, I think he's going to end up playing in Austin all year.
What do you think about that, Trevor, about Samanich?
I think history would suggest that, yeah, Austin is going to be his home for year one. But I think Ben makes a good point about Bertans. You know, I think the Denver series left a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths. He was really good last year. I mean, he was really good. Yeah. He hit a cold streak. Was that right? Like right around the All-Star break, right? There was a cold streak, but he was really good for the most part. And, I just think there's a limitation to his game, that is going to keep him as fringe starter, but more likely, you know, the first or second big off the bench. I think the real question is, do they intend to go with the Pirtle Aldridge starting lineup? Because if that's what their plan is, I feel like then everyone who could get minutes at the, you know, quote unquote four, Rudy, Davis, Chimezie, Samanich, like all those guys, probably just like all their minutes get reduced. So it's really just a question of how often are they going to go that big starting lineup? And also, I don't know what they're doing with the mid-level exception. We're operating under the tax. I mean, would they just say, let's just use the mid-level for Rudy? Would Rudy accept only $9 million? Or because they can use the mid-level and just go over the cap, stay over the cap and sign Rudy like they have his early bird rights now. They can do that. That's a really interesting. It's a really interesting predicament they're in because I just don't know what they're looking for in free agency. Are they looking for someone who's more of like a 2-3, a 3-4, a 4-5? Like, I just don't know.
I think it's fair to say that the Spurs are also, for lack of a better word, capped by the money they have available to them. I just don't see this summer as being the summer where the Spurs try and make things happen, so to speak.
Right.
I think it's really going to be next summer when some guys come off the books, they can move things around, and they are going to have some decisions to make on some of the young guys to extend an offer for their second contract from their rookie contract. And I think, you know, depending on how guys play this year, that
could very well affect that too.
Yeah, for sure. And so I really think that's why, you know, two things. That one thing that Trevor brought up was the fact that, you know, we don't know how they're going to start this this year. Is are they going to put Rudy as a starting four and then LaMarcus at the five again, go small ball? Or are they going to do that traditional type of lineup that they ended the year with? And then, of course, they had to use that lineup with Aldridge and Pirtle because they were playing Denver, who plays more of a traditional style. So that's a big question there, like Trevor, you mentioned. If Aldridge at the four, I mean, really, where is Bertans? Where is Samanich? Where are these guys getting minutes at the four? There's just none available. But I do wonder, what do y'all think about the idea of trading Bertans this coming week or even when free agency starts? Just because I feel like he is an attractive contract to teams. He's on the last year of his deal. He's a good shooter. He's a young player. And, you know, obviously if you trade him and you bring Rudy back, well, then you have some minutes there for Samanich or Metu to battle with. What do y'all think about that?
I mean, I have been wondering that. I've also been wondering about Bryn Forbes, not to – this might jump ahead or segue into the Keldon conversation, but I've been wondering that about Bryn Forbes too. It's just Lonnie's coming. Lonnie, you would assume Lonnie Walker's going to get more minutes. DeJounte Murray's coming back, so that's obviously – 35 minutes that you got to find a game that you got to find time for. So, you know, our Bertans, Bellinelli and Forbes, I feel like at least among Spurs Twitter, but you would assume that those are the guys that are probably going to, you would hear the most buzz about are the ones that are the most available.
Yeah, for sure.
So I wouldn't surprise me, I suppose is the point.
All right, let's go ahead and move on. So, yeah, so basically we all expect right now if this roster stays intact and Rudy does come back, then we probably see Samanich spending a lot of time in Austin next year. Let's move on to the second pick the Spurs made, and that was the 29th. They got Keldon Johnson at that pick. He's a 6'6 wing from Kentucky, 19 years old also. He will turn 20, though, I think in October or September. Let's see here. Strengths, has solid physical tools for an NBA wing. He's a versatile and aggressive player at both ends of the court. He takes on challenges at the defensive end. He shows promise as being a perimeter shooter. Last year in college, he shot 38% on 118 attempts from three at Kentucky. You know, when we spoke to the media that night on draft night, he says that he's a versatile. He's versatile. He can play multiple positions. So I guess, Ben, what did you think about them taking Johnson at 29th?
Well, Keldon Johnson was a guy I thought would go possibly just outside the lottery. So I thought at 29 it was great value, and I saw a lot of people pointed out what they considered an irony or something funny, whatever you may call it. But, you know, they thought the Spurs reached for Samanich at 19 but got a steal with Johnson at 29, and it's like they probably could have gotten either player at either spot if we're being honest. So, you know, they still end up with two guys they wanted. Doesn't really matter how we got there, but we're there. So I thought it was a good pick. I had him as a guy who was not dropping past 20. So I mean, this draft was weird for a bunch of reasons. There were a bunch of guys who dropped who had no business dropping. So I don't know if there were major red flags on medicals or what for this draft, but guys just dropped who didn't make sense dropping. So I guess in that regard, it kind of makes sense that Keldon Johnson fell to 29.
What did you think about Keldon, Trevor, at 29?
Yeah, real quick, Ben, if the Spurs had taken Keldon Johnson at 19 and Samanich at 29, do you think anyone would have complained? Or would everyone just been like, yeah, that makes sense?
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it – that's the exact response it would have been. Like, okay, yeah, that seems right.
So, all right, well, they got both guys. They filled both needs, so I feel like people should stop complaining. But
agreed.
That's
I'm with you.
Anyways,
I think Clark and Little are always going to be – Samanich is always going to have Clark and Little as his measuring stick, unfortunately.
Yeah.
The rest of his either career, of those, I think.
If either of those guys pop, especially early, that's going to be – especially they're both going to be in the Western Conference, so we're going to see them four times a year. The Keldon – I don't know why he fell. A lot of guys that got green room invites fell. That was pretty weird. You know, usually you get one guy, but it was like four or five guys well into the 20s before – and obviously poor Bol Bol. Going all the way to the middle of the second round, but
it was his suit. Let's be honest.
Yeah, it probably was. I don't know why Keldon fell. I saw a lot of draft Knicks say that they thought maybe he didn't have that much upside, that much versatility to his game. But I mean, at 19, you're getting a guy that competes. Who can finish at the rim, who can hit open threes. I don't know I don't know. That seems like a pretty safe bet outside the lottery to me. Like, I don't know what your I don't know why he fell either, but I'm happy he did. I think he's, you know, even if he doesn't become, I mean, he fits perfectly with the Spurs need right now, because let's just say, like, yeah, he doesn't have a ton of offensive upside as far as what he can do as a shot creator for himself. If we're putting him anywhere around the arc and DeJounte or Derek or DeMar or Lonnie or Patty or anybody's driving to the rim, like, that's exactly what they're going to need. They're going to need a guy that can hit an open shot, and if somebody closes out on him, he can get to the rim and finish, or get to the bat, or get to the free throw line or whatever. So with thrilled he fell. I was stunned that he fell that far. I, you know, when he was still there at 19, I was like, okay, sure. And then that was a weird thing where Shams reported that Cleveland was taking him. They ended up taking
Dylan. That's right. Yeah.
So
I forgot about that. That happened too. Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool. I mean, having multiple first round draft picks is fun.
So I actually think that out of these two guys, I feel like Kelden actually has a chance to get some minutes next year. And I go back to that Kawhi year one example. Just yep. Because you look at the tape, and what do you see? The first thing he's known for is his defense, his tenacity on defense, how he wants to guard the best player, mm-hmm. you know, on the wing. That's what they need, obviously, is a wing defender. And, of course, what does Pop love? He loves that type of style in a player. So I really feel like if there's anyone who can beat out, you know, Forbes, Marco Bellinelli or Lonnie Walker for minutes, it's going to be this guy. It's going to be Kelden Johnson. What do y'all think about him and just the fact that he has that upside in terms of his defense already walking in that Coach Pop's going to love, Ben?
I think his defense is going to get him minutes. Like you said, he's a guy who gets after it. He's up in dudes' grills. If you watch his last season at Kentucky, he was always, like you said, he was always guarding the best player. He was always up in them. He made them very uncomfortable over the course of a game. He gets steals because he's so active. He is the hard-nosed defender you want on this team. And like Trevor mentioned, he can be a really good 3-and-D guy. You get a guy who penetrates, you pitch to him, and he's going to be a reliable shooter from the corner or wherever it is you find him on the three-point line.
He's got a pretty thick frame already, too. Like, I don't feel like, you know, obviously him and Lonnie are not the same players, but last year, you know, Lonnie was a wiry guy. Obviously, DeJounte was wiry when he came in, but like Kelden looks like he's already got some muscle on him. Like he could deal with, you know, if you put him in for 15, 20 minutes a game. And surprise, probably a little ambitious, but yeah, 12 or 15 minutes a game, he's not just gonna get beat up. I don't think anyone's really gonna take him into the post except like freaking LeBron. But you know, no one that you would ask him to defend in year one is gonna take advantage of him. Just by overpowering him or anything like that.
And people don't like to talk about this because they don't like to admit that John Calipari is a good coach and he gets his guys ready for the NBA. But that Kentucky program gets guys ready for the NBA. They get
for sure.
They get people in the first round every single year without fail. There are, PJ Washington could have left last year, maybe been picked in the 20s. He stays a year. He works on his game. He becomes a considerably better three-point shooter. He gets picked 12. I mean, I actually thought he was going to go a pick later to the Heat for what that's worth. But, I mean, 12 in the lottery, great pick for him, great situation for him, I think. So Kentucky and John Calipari gets dudes drafted.
I think the other thing is, you know, sometimes guys in Kentucky's system can get pigeonholed into like Devin Booker was just a spot-up shooter.
Yeah, I remember that.
Anthony Davis is on the block a lot. And look, you know, Davis obviously is a more talented prospect than Kelden ever could be. Booker, though, like, you know, Booker was a late lottery, I think, a late lottery pick. You know, maybe we haven't seen all that there is to offer from Kelden Johnson because that's not what he was asked of in Cal's system, you know. I did the same thing with PJ Washington. Could PJ Washington be a small forward in the league? He certainly has the body for it, but he was asked to play power forward at Kentucky.
Yeah.
So we don't know.
That's what I had asked Ben on the last episode of, you know, before the draft, was when the Spurs, you know, were rumored to maybe get P.J. Washington. I like, you know, his size and everything. He's 6'8" mm-hmm. and everything, but I didn't like his offensive style. And I even asked Ben, I said, is that more because Kentucky made him play like that? And that might have been the case, like you guys just said. And actually, Cal was on record of saying that he thinks Keldon, there was a video going around where he thinks he's going to be the best, you know, have the best NBA career out of these three guys early on. That wasn't the exact words, but he was saying basically he thinks Keldon's going to be the best fit right now, that has one of the better seasons in terms of NBA players. Now, we can go back to kind of a topic we were talking about, which is the trade market now, and we're looking now at Bryn Forbes, Marco Bellinelli, are two names that are definitely, I think, tradable assets right now for the Spurs because of getting Keldon. So if they want to give Keldon some minutes, obviously, like I mentioned, there's a bunch of players in front of him. They have a lot of wings and guards. So I know we kind of had that conversation already, but I guess, Ben, do you agree with that those guys are – have to kind of watch out because of drafting Keldon, they could be on the block, especially since somebody like Bryn's on an attractive contract?
Absolutely. I mean, Bryn Forbes, the way he played last season, he completely outplayed his contract. And there have to be teams who see that and say, oh, if we can get that last year of his contract, squeeze everything out of him that we can. I mean, you have to think the Spurs will hold somebody ransom and get something good in return, whether it's another player or picks down the road, whatever it may be. But for sure, Bryn Forbes has played better than what was he making, $4 million a year right now?
Yeah, something right? $3-4 million. Yeah,
it's right. Like, I think it was 12 mil over 3 years or something like that.
Yeah,
he has not played like a $4 million player. He's played closer to like an $8 to $10 million player, I would say.
Yeah, and Pop constantly had that comment throughout. Oh, he's only making $2.8 million this coming season. Wow.
Oh,
so yeah, Pop would have that quote throughout the year where he'd say something like, "I don't want Bryn to tear up his contract" and stuff like that. He was just kind of joking around how they got so much value out of a player at that market value. So I know that the Spurs, this typical Spurs team like we saw last year, is that they don't have a traditional small forward, you know, that 6'8 to 6'9 guy. But they do play a lot of DeMar at the three. They play a lot of Marco at the three. So my question to you, Trevor, is can Keldon play that in today's NBA, that three spot, you know, whether it's coming off the bench or even starting? What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's if DeMar's playing a three, Keldon's right around DeMar's size. I don't see why not. I think Keldon has a defensive mentality more than DeMar has, and that's not a shot at DeMar. DeMar is what DeMar is, and that's a very good player. I'm certainly not here to criticize DeMar's game, aside from, you know, if he wants to shoot more threes, cool, but otherwise, like, you know, like
hit nudge nudge wink wink.
Well, sure, but I mean, DeMar's a whole different conversation, but it's just like, you know, he's not Kawhi Leonard, and thus he's something else that you know, like, he's just not, he's not good enough, you know. But anyways, but back to Keldon. Yeah, I mean, I think he could absolutely play small forward. Or whatever we're calling. I still call it small forward because that's what the NBA list is.
Yeah.
Like everyone's a ball handler, wing, big. It's like, all right, well, you know.
He's just a wing, really, Rick.
Especially, you know, if it's, let's just say the lineups that are out there are DeJounte, DeMar, Keldon, Derek, DeJounte, Keldon. I mean, that's a big line. I mean, those are just pretty much interchangeable dudes. You know, whoever's taken, you would just assume that Derek and DeJounte would be guarding the best wings on the other team. And then you're asking Keldon to just be the guy that guards the third wing, which is great. That's, I mean, I think he'll excel at that.
I was going to say, maybe he even plays a little free safety. He gets some steals every
for
game,
sure.
Just kind of hanging out and playing basketball.
You know, it kind of reminds me of the situation. Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the situation that that Danny was in, you know, during Kawhi, especially during Kawhi's ascension, when Kawhi was actively, because he didn't have the big offensive load that he had, he was actively guarding the other team's best perimeter player. And so Danny got to excel, and not that Danny couldn't guard the other team's best perimeter player, because he could, but he really excelled when, like, all he had to do was chase Klay Thompson around. All he had to do was guard Bradley Beal or, you know, whatever. So I think you ask Keldon to do that, and I think he's gonna do really well. I don't know if he does really well in year one, but I think he's gonna do really well in the role the Spurs ask him to play.
Yeah, I'd say the safe bet is just that he's going to, you know, like kind of like Luka, just end up in Austin because there's so many other guys ahead of him. But I feel like he definitely, if you had to put, you know, a percentage on which player has a better chance of getting a cracking Pop's rotation, I think Keldon's definitely that player. I think we would all agree there just because of, you know, the need that they need as a wing defender and the plus, you know, Pop, that's kind of what he likes more so when you look at his coaching style.
I think also, Paul, just to add to that, I think also when you look at the free agent market, you know, you would say that they need a traditional small forward, but like the guys that are out there, Trevor Ariza, Damari Carroll, I guess Wes Matthews, you could just like plug right in at that three. But I feel like those guys, the Arizas and the Damari Carrolls of the world, they're playing as much small ball four as they're playing, you know, the traditional, small forward spot. So, that's not great for Samanich, whereas Keldon is a little bit more interchangeable at the wing positions.
Yeah, for sure. And that's why, we talked about that earlier. I've had trouble, too, pinpointing what free agent targets they need, because I even feel like if you do get, like, a classic, like, you know, 3-4 type of wing, like an Ariza, you're taking minutes away from some of these young guys who you want to eventually crack the rotation. So I really don't know where they're going to target. I know that obviously the one name we've seen is Bojan Bogdanović, which shows you that they want more scoring in terms of the guy to create his own shot from that position. And outside of him, there's not a lot of those guys in the free agent market. So, all right, guys, let's move on to the last pick that they made. And this is the second round. This was Quindary Weatherspoon. He's actually a guard, 6'4 guard from Mississippi State, 22 years old. His strengths, he's a multifaceted guard with a great feel for the game. He's a reliable shooter who takes good shots. He makes smart plays off the bounce. He's an active defender with quick hands. He shot 40% from three last year out of 139 attempts. Ben, what did you think about this pick in the second round for Quindary?
I wasn't a big fan initially. I didn't think the Spurs needed another guard. That's really what it came down to for me. I thought they could have addressed a position of need, as it were, at big or at a forward position. But the more I read about Weatherspoon, the more content, I guess, I was with the pick. I mean, he's a kid who's going to play defense. He can get a shot. I do appreciate that. But I thought there were some good players available at that pick that might have made more sense. I thought Naz Reid, he didn't get drafted at all, so he was definitely available. Someone like him, I had a little bit of, I'm not going to lie to you, I had a little bit of a man crush on him this year. Even as a Florida guy, not enjoying watching LSU basketball, I liked Naz Reid's game. And I don't know, I thought there were some other guys they could have gone after, but I don't hate the pick. I'm not going to come out here and be all, you know, happy-go-lucky about it, I guess. I'm not gonna hype it up. I'm not gonna get all excited about it, but I have cautious optimism.
What did you think, Trevor, about Weatherspoon?
You know, the second round, I tend to just, especially later in the second round, it's just I was just surprised they didn't draft and stash, but I think probably it wasn't a great international crop this year. So it's fun, you know. Everything I've read is, his personality and just his feel for the game really fits the Spurs culture. So why not just, you know, why not take a chance on that? He had a really good first. He was in the, if I'm remembering correctly, he was in that G League workout and then got invited to the combine as a result of how he played. So obviously he's a guy who, you know, really took the draft process really serious because he needed to make sure he had to really prove himself to get to where he was. It's fine, you know, because you never know, man. Like, what happens if Bryn gets traded, Patty retires, whatever. I mean, Patty's only 30, by the way. I was looking that up the other day. I was like, oh, Patty Mills is only 30 years old. But, you know, like, what if something happens? What if one of those guys, some crazy injury happens, or you know, the next disgruntled superstar becomes available and the Spurs got to unload their cache of guards. And they need somebody who can at least play spot minutes early in his career. So, you know, he seems like that type of guy.
Yeah. And normally, you know, with this, like you said, Trevor, I really was surprised too that they didn't draft the stash. And just because for me, it was more the roster size already that they have. They basically, with Rudy back, they're going to have 14 players under contract. after they signed these two rookies. So you only have one spot left, and you're probably using that to go get a free agent. But now, you know, do you guys feel that the only way this guy gets a guaranteed contract with the Spurs is if he has a really impressive summer league and training camp? What do y'all think about that, Ben?
I think that's probably fair to say. Just like you said, that they don't have the roster space. And I would argue that unless he just absolutely balls out, there's no reason to kind of save him a space and get rid of someone else or waive or whatever it is, anyone else, just to make room for him. But having said that, and having heard what Trevor said, I think it's possible that he does do that. He does impress in summer league. He does impress during training camp, and he certainly could earn his way onto this team.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point Trevor made about Patty Mills, because, you know, Mills is going to be with the team this year, this coming season, then also he has a guarantee next season. But who knows if that's kind of the role they want Quindary to have. But Trevor, do you anticipate, though, like, let's say he doesn't have a great summer league or training camp, do you anticipate he'd probably just end up signing a G League contract or possibly a two-way contract?
Yeah, like, I don't remember exactly what the process is, but, like, they could invite him to camp, and then, like, he's got to hit, like, he's got to, like, get to the certain level where they can just... Then they can just assign him to Austin, and he signs the standard G League. I don't remember how the mechanics of it, but I think that's probably the route he ends up, at least in year one.
Yeah, for sure.
Unless something pops at summer league and training camp, you know, that was Bryn Forbes. Not that he was drafted by the Spurs, but it was just like, that was Gary Neal. Yeah. All of a sudden, these guys just turned it on. Shouts to Gary Neal.
Rationally confident Gary Neal, my man.
Gary Neal and Bryn Forbes, the two summer league guys, that are always with those examples. All right, guys, thanks again for coming on this episode, SpursCast episode 547. SpursCast listeners, if you're on Twitter, follow Ben. His Twitter handle is @the_Boomstein. If you're on Twitter, also follow Trevor. His Twitter handle is @TrevorWrites. Thank you to Michael DeLeon for mixing and producing this episode. My name is Paul Garcia. Thank you. Have a great day.